Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want when you want with access to over 2,000 high-quality online courses, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit lynda.com/know-how. That's LYNDA.com/know-how. On this episode of Know-How, you'll learn basic soldering techniques, check out a brand new drone, and get your podcast on. Welcome to Know How. It's the Twitch show where we bend, break, build, upgrade, and all so much more. I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Patrick Delahanty.
And he is not Cranky Hippo. Cranky Hippo right now is in the Himalayas searching for a secret cache of Dogecoin. And so until he comes back, we've got Patrick. And everyone should say hello to him because he's a really nice guy.
Hi.
Hi.
I've been on the show before.
Yeah, I know. It's nice, right? It's kind of gentle.
You, so
yeah, we just talk to chat room.
Yeah.
Now, Patrick, let me ask you about this. Do you like water?
I drink it every day.
I know. It's one of those things, right?
Yeah.
Well, what if you lived in a country where you didn't have all that much water? You didn't have clean water. You didn't have access to clean water. You just had a kind of dirty, grimy, nasty, polluted stuff.
So, like New Jersey.
Like exactly like New Jersey. Well, no, I'm talking more about worldwide. We have 768 million people around the world who the World Health Organization has said does not have access to clean water. They have to walk miles, and typically they get some sort of polluted well or a stream that's just filled with stuff that you and I wouldn't even look at, but that's the only source of water they have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what can we do to help?
Well, what we can do to help is we could help them build these little structures called Waka Towers. Now, you're going to love this story. Imagine a plastic bag inside a 30-foot structure that just gathers water from the atmosphere.
A Waka Tower.
A Waka Tower.
It's like a walker?
Well, kind of. It looks like a big pineapple. I think Alex has got some of the pages that's actually going to show what the thing looks like. But the study also showed that there's about 1,400 children who die under the age of 5 each year or each day because of waterborne illnesses. Now, there's a designer, a French designer, Arturo Vittori, who wants to solve that problem with these Waka Towers, which the way that they work is they generate a chimney effect. So you've got sort of a structure surrounding what is essentially a polyurethane bag. Now, the structure could be made out of anything that's local. So if you're in Asia, you make it out of bamboo. Or, you know, if you're in the forest, you make it out of banana leaves. Whatever's going to be, whatever can give it enough structural support. Then there's this polyurethane bag that goes inside. And as the chimney effect takes place, so warm air goes out the top, cold air gets pulled in through the bottom, it collects atmospheric water. It pulls water vapor out of the atmosphere, and you can get up to 25 gallons of pure, clean drinking water at the bottom of these things.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive.
It's impressive.
Yeah.
Now, okay, all the science behind this is fine. The technology behind it is well known. We know how this thing works. The question is, are these things going to be fragile? Are they going to last? We know that each tower is going to cost about $550. We know that they can be built in under a week with just a 4-person team. We know that they are sustainable because they use locally available materials. But we want to see them out in the field before we start saying, yeah, this is the next thing that's going to save the third world.
Yeah, and it probably depends on the quality of the local materials they use to build it and the labor, how much effort they put into it.
Right. Like anything, it's like putting something together from IKEA. If you bought 4 bookshelves from IKEA, 3 of them are going to be awesome. That very first one is going to be shaky. You don't want to have the first one. You want to have the next or the one after that in the series of constructions.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it just because this is an example of some smart people getting together, building something that at the same time works, but, and obviously, go back to those pictures, Alex. These things are just kind of beautiful. I mean, I guess this is what you get when you have technology that was built by a designer. Yeah.
So 25 gallons a day, that supports how many people for each of these towers?
You need about 5 gallons in here, in this world. We need about 5 gallons per person per day. But if you weren't living at the quality of life of the United States, 25 gallons could
like, yeah, they can stretch it out.
Yeah, you can really stretch it out.
Yeah.
All right, so clean water, good. Waka Tower's good. We don't really know how it's going to play out over time. Now, let's get past that. One of the things that our audience has asked for is basic tips for soldering. Now, they've seen me solder on the show, and they know I'm horrible. I can make it work, but it's not so great.
You're better than I am. I learned how to solder doing stained glass windows, so I just lump the solder on, just like you would on a window.
Yeah, and unfortunately, lumpy solder, it's not just that it doesn't look good, it's just that that could really be really bad. You know, what I've learned from my time with some of the people from the Hardware Hacking Village at DEF CON has been you need not just good-looking, but you need clean solders in order to make sure you don't get things like cold solder joints. Now, luckily, we had one of my friends from DEF CON, Smitty. You may know him if you've ever stopped by the Hardware Hacking Village. He's sort of the you'll recognize him. He's the guy wearing the top hat and the kilt. That's sort of a signature thing. But he stopped by the studios, and he talked to Brian to bring us soldering 101.
Hi, my name is Smitty, and I'm going to be teaching you a little bit about how to solder today. First thing I want to go into is talking about the different tools that we use for soldering. First and foremost is obviously the soldering iron. I have here a Metcal soldering iron. It is a very nice soldering iron, but you don't have to worry too much about having one that's this nice. This is just what I have. Any Weller soldering iron will do. There are lots of different Chinese brands that are available in various different stores like Fry's or Radio Shack or on Amazon. And they'll all do a good job. Soldering irons are mostly roughly equivalent. They get hot, they're a piece of metal, they've got a tip, you're in good shape. One of the things that you want to pay attention to is the shape of the tip. And most soldering irons have exchangeable tips. For example, this one is a wedge shape. You can notice that there's a flat edge right there on that one, but if you turn it on the side, how it's kind of down to a point. This is a relatively small wedge tip soldering iron. Soldering irons, you're also going to need something to clean your soldering iron. You can use a wet sponge. You can use a wet piece of paper towel in a pinch. I prefer these metal kind of Brillo pad looking things. You can get them, again, any place you buy a soldering iron. This one, you can tell, has seen a lot of love. It looks like the one that you use to scrub out your pans after about 7 years, right? I've used this one for a long time. They pretty much don't wear out, except they just kind of get flatter. The advantage to these instead of one of the wet ones is that these don't make your soldering tip cold. If you take a soldering iron, the whole thing about the soldering iron is that they need to be hot. And so if you're doing some soldering and then you go over and clean it off like this into a wet sponge, that's going to cool down your tip. This won't do that. That's why I like these. another thing that you will need is a stand. A stand for your soldering iron, some place to put the soldering tip while you're not using it, so that you don't lay it on the table, it doesn't roll off the table, you don't burn your surface, whatever. This one also has an integrated kind of helping hands. But these are great for holding cables or wires that you're trying to solder together. So if you've got a wire and a connector and you kind of need to line them up just right and then go in with the soldering, these are really good for that. One more piece of equipment that I don't have with me today is a magnifying glass. This one will allow you to connect a little magnifying glass to that knob there, and you can adjust it and move it into the right spot so that you can see what you're working on a lot better. I have a big desk-mounted one with a ring light in it, so you bring it down, and it's got the light here that illuminates the object you're working on, and you hold it in, and you can look at it. It works really well. That's at my house. I'm at the studio today, so I don't have that with me. You got a stand over here to hold your soldering iron. You also want to have something to hold your board. In a pinch, you can use these alligator clips for it, but I really like the Panavice. This is a Panavice Junior something something. I don't remember the exact model number, but it has these little clamps that you can put your board in, and it holds it fast. And then you can go in and start working on what you need to work on without having to also hold the board and, you know, use your third hand to hold the board and the fourth hand to bring in the solder. I've only got two hands. So I like having these. Of course, you're going to need solder. Solder comes in lots of different flavors and sizes and types. This is a simple, what is this, a 6040? This is an old one. It still has lead. Lead is getting harder and harder to find. I like the finer solders because you can always add more solder for something that you should have used a thicker solder on. You can just keep using more of this. But if you've got a thicker solder, you can't use it where you need just a little bit of solder. So I prefer the thinner solders, but a thicker solder will work as well. This is, what size is this? 0.025. So this is a pretty small solder. You want to make sure you use electronics solder, not pipe solder, not for plumbing. Plumbing solder uses a different kind of flux that will ruin your circuits. This one has a rosin core. It's a little goo in the middle of this. This has actually a tube, not a wire. And inside is a little bit of goo. It's called rosin. And what it does is as it heats up, it kind of bubbles a little bit and it cleans off the surfaces that you're going to be soldering together and it makes it a lot easier to solder. Kester is a good brand. Radio Shack's got good solder. Again, you can buy them, you know, anywhere that you buy the rest of the stuff. Solder wick. Now, I don't know about you all. You may be perfect, but I'm not. I make a lot of mistakes. And so I always keep solder wick handy. Solder wick is literally just a copper braid. I'll hold it up to this camera. It's a little copper braid that has some holes in it, and it's impregnated with a little bit of rosin in there as well. And if you make a mistake, you can go into your mistake, put the solder wick on top of it, push the soldering iron down on it. It will heat up the wick and the joint, and the wick will literally just suck up all of that solder and make the component a little easier to pull out, or a lot easier to pull out. As you can tell, I've got some solder on this one that I haven't cleaned up yet. I make up enough mistakes to have two. What else? Let's see here. Diagonal cutters. Very important. Diagonal cutters are nice because they have a flat edge here, and the cutting surface is right next to that flat edge. I don't know if you can see it on that camera, but the cutting surface is right next to that edge. And so if you lay this flat on the board like this and then cut, it will cut it as close to the board as humanly possible. And for surface mount, you absolutely want tweezers. I've got big sausage fingers. Sausage fingers are not good at holding little tiny surface mount components on the board while you get your soldering iron. That's wonderful. That'll go on the blooper reel. While you get your soldering iron down in there, and, you know, hold the thing in there and it gets really hot and you end up with calluses on your fingers, like me. Tweezers are very good. You can get these. I bought mine at SparkFun, actually. These are not the SparkFun ones. SparkFuns are red. But you can get these anywhere you buy the rest of the soldering gear. I think that's about it. I also keep a Leatherman handy. Leathermans are good for, or any multi-tool, are good for bending wires. If you want to make a sharp, small bend in a wire, you can do that kind of thing with any pliers or whatever. They also have a wire stripping section in there. This one doesn't have any insulation, but if it did, you could go in there and just kind of strip it off. They're very handy to use for lots of different things. So I always keep one of those around. Not strictly a soldering device, but multimeters are also very handy when doing electronics works. If you need to test for a solder bridge, you can use the ohm meter on here or the continuity tester, and that will tell you whether you've got a solder bridge in certain places. If you're not sure what value your resistor is, you can use it to measure resistors. This one's pretty simple. All it does is voltage and resistance and apparently capacitance. Who knew? But they come in much more full-featured, complex versions of these that will measure current and other things as well. Today, I'm just going to be using it and demonstrate how to measure a resistor, for example. All right, so I told you that I have a really good soldering iron. I'm going to tell you why this is a really good soldering iron. So the tips are interchangeable. They come out very quickly, no tools required. If you look in the end of that connector, you'll notice that it looks like a coax connector. There's a center conductor and an outer insulator. This is actually an RF soldering iron. It uses radio frequency. One of the advantages to this, you'll notice that I'm touching it. It is cold. It is not hot in any way, shape, or form. I have not turned this on yet today. I will turn this on right now. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. In less than 10 seconds, I'm already working on soldering. This thing heats up incredibly quickly. Whereas a Weller, if you were to use a Weller or some of the other soldering irons, they would take probably 5 or 10 minutes to heat up. So with all soldering irons, whether they're the expensive Metcal or your reasonably priced Weller or your cheapo Radio Shack, one thing you always want to make sure is that you've got a nice shiny tip. That shiny tip means that the solder is flowing and the tip is working and that you are going to have some good luck making some good clean solder joints. If you've got a dull tip, after you've turned it on and you got it all warmed up, take some solder, melt the solder on the tip. Do not put your hands underneath it because they will drip. Melt some solder on it. That's called tinning the soldering tip. Take your sponge, wipe it off like that. If it comes out nice and clean and shiny like that, you're in good shape. If it comes out dull or with color on it or anything other than looking nice and silver shiny like that, then you're going to have a hard time soldering. One trick that you can do if you don't mind destroying your knife is take a knife and kind of scrape off some of the yucky bits on the soldering tip. And that can sometimes save a bad soldering tip. This one's in pretty good shape, so I don't need to do too much of this. But if you've got a crummy soldering tip, that's something you can do that will help bring it back from the dead.
And we really want to thank Mark Smith, Smitty Halibut on Twitter, for helping us out with that segment. He's going to be coming by every once in a while to give us some soldering tips. Cool. And I would love it if you would please jump onto Twitter and hit him at Smitty Halibut and tell him that you loved him on Know How. Cool. Now, you do soldering, but not this kind of electronic soldering, right?
Yeah, I did soldering on stained glass windows. My mother taught me.
It's a little bit different.
Yeah, yeah.
It's mostly just glob it up.
Although now I'm thinking maybe I can put some electronic circuits into a window and have something happen.
You could, but you know, I think in any case, it's really good to have these basic soldering tips because most of us, you know, we get the soldering kit from Fry's Electronics or Amazon, and as soon as we're melting solder, we think we're soldering.
Yeah.
Someone like Smitty, it's kind of humbling to watch him go because he works so quickly and everything looks good. And that's just what happens when you get that kind of practice.
Yeah, and that's how you can have a good circuit versus just a glob of solder in the middle of two wires.
That's usually
what I have.
Yeah, I will admit to doing things like sanding down my globs of solder, which you're not supposed to do. Never ever do that. But if you get it right the first time, if you practice it, and if it's something that's actually important to you, to have good looking, well functioning solder joints, you got to put in the time to learn the basics.
Yeah, and when I just learned tinning, it made such a difference. Yeah. So, I mean, all these tips are great.
There you go. Yeah. Now, we love tips because we are a knowledge show. We try to teach you how to do things in the real world, but, you know, we can't show you everything. We only have 45 minutes a week. We try to bring you the projects that are near and dear to our hearts, but sometimes you got to go outside. You got to go elsewhere. You got to go to an authoritative source to find the knowledge you need. And that's why we're happy to have Lynda.com as a sponsor of Know How. Now, what is Lynda.com, you may ask yourself? Lynda is, it's an online learning emporium. It's where you can go to find the knowledge that you need when you need to know it. It's really that simple. Now, what do you want to do in 2014? Do you want to learn photography? Do you want to learn audio and video editing? Do you want to learn software skills? Well, with the easy-to-follow video tutorials on Lynda.com, you can learn at your own pace, on your own terms, from top industry experts. With a Lynda.com subscription, members receive unlimited access to thousands of online video courses that cover a variety of software, creative, and business skills. Now, the course that I've been doing on Lynda right now is Python for the Raspberry Pi. They've got a whole series of videos, a series of classes that will teach you from the beginning to the end simple Python projects that get you into the groove of programming your Raspberry Pi. It's something that I think, it serves you well because for me, it works both on Know How and one of my own other shows, Coding 101, but also it lets you kind of take a glimpse into how the world works around you. Now, with Lynda, you get to improve your skills, learn new software, and keep up with new technologies. They have over 2,000 courses with new courses added daily. Instructors are working professionals at the top of their fields and they're expert teachers. They create high-quality video productions from state-of-the-art studios. Now, these aren't those homemade videos you'll find on YouTube, which I know and I love. I used to create those things, but there is something special about having a video that looks right, that sounds right, that has a person who actually knows what he's doing and knows how to teach. That's what Lynda gives to you. Now, they have easy-to-follow videos with searchable transcripts that help you find the answer that you need when you need to have it. You can search inside a video, which means you don't have to run through a video skipping back and forth to find the particular piece or the particular problem you want solved. No, with that transcript, you know exactly where to jump. You know exactly where to look. They have courses for all experience levels that cover a wide range of technical skills, creative techniques, business strategies, and so much more. Lynda lets you watch from your computer, tablet, or mobile device, which means you can switch and pick up on the chapter where you left off, learning at your own pace, learning at your own schedule, learning on your own time. Lynda.com also offers certificates of course completion, which you can publish to your LinkedIn profile to let people know that you've run through a Lynda course. So here's what we want you to do. If you are a know-it-all, if you like to do it yourself, if you like to learn, well, then learn something new in 2014 with Lynda.com. It's only $25 a month for access to the entire Lynda.com course library. Or for $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan, which includes exercise files that let you follow along with the instructor's projects using the exact same assets. And you can try Lynda.com right now with a free 7-day trial. Visit lynda.com/knowhow to access the entire library. That's over 2,000 courses free for 7 days. It's all at lynda.com/knowhow. And we thank Lynda for their support of KnowHow. Patrick, yes. Remember that little drone that we had for a while?
Oh, that thing was awesome.
That thing was awesome, yeah. Until we kind of crashed it.
Oh, wait, it doesn't work anymore?
Well, we gave it
what
to Brian.
What did you do?
We gave
it to Brian. Oh, Brian did it? Brian. Yeah. Blame the guy who's not here.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, he's sick, so yeah, he crashed into a building. And we have to fix it. We can fix it, but, you know, drones are really cool, and the shots that they give you are incredible. When you consider that that aerial shot that you can get from a drone, if you actually had to rent a crane, would cost 2 to 3 times the price of the drone itself. They're actually really economical for filmmakers.
Yeah, and I remember at one point I worked for a company that hired a helicopter to get a group photo.
Right.
Nowadays, they could just use a drone.
Yeah,
put it up.
Exactly. We used to think that they were toys, right? They're little things that you would buy as a kid, and you'd set it up
at the mall.
Right. But the new ones are just incredible works of high tech art. They contain everything from GPS locators to auto stabilization intelligence. So it's really a new game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is why I'm happy that I stopped by the booth of DJI at the National Association of Broadcasters show in Las Vegas. I'm Father Robert Ballas here, the digital Jesuit with Twit TV at NAB 2014. Now, if you are in production, you've probably heard about DJI. They're the ones who make these wonderful, wonderful drones. In fact, we saw one of the videos created with a DJI drone not too long ago on our channel. Corridor Digital showed their video of what Superman would look like if he were wearing a GoPro. And of course, that GoPro was mounted on the carriage of a DJI drone. This is their second generation drone. Now, there are a few things that they've changed. The first thing is they've dropped the price. This is now $1,299, which is just $100 more than the first generation drone they showed off at CES. Also, they've increased the loiter time to 25 minutes. That means that once you get this up in the air, well, you've got a lot more time to get your shot. A few things that they've done to the electronics, they've included a Wi-Fi range extender, which basically doubles the range to about 700 meters. So you can get this drone far, far away from you, get those really high shots or those far shots if that's what you're looking for. Now, it's not just the platform that they've changed. They've also improved the camera. Underneath the carriage of this drone is a 14-megapixel, fully gyro-stabilized camera. That means that you can use your phone mounted on the top of this controller to tilt back and forth to control the direction of the camera in mid-flight. Also, they've moved the electronics off of the camera itself into the body of the drone, which means that the weight of the camera is not so much that it can't be finely controlled by the motor servos. Now, we've got plenty of footage of this drone in flight from Showstoppers the other day. And in fact, we've got some footage from here in the booth just showing the fine control that they can have of positioning, altitude, longitude, latitude, whatever. Now, the last feature I absolutely think is going to be essential. It's going to become the norm for these types of devices is the GPS home feature. When you get this into an area where it can receive a GPS signal, it knows it's home. Which means that if you lose connectivity, if your controller dies, if somehow the Wi-Fi cuts out, the drone won't plummet and crash or fly out into the ocean. It will actually come back to the position it knows at home. It's a nice thing to do if you want to save your investment. Now, we're going to see more and more of this at NAB 2014, but if you want the gold standard,
It's all DJI.
I want to thank the folks over at DJI for letting us play with that. Those shots, actually, it may not have been us, because those shots weren't strictly legal. We probably shouldn't have been
over. Well, they did look like stock footage.
Is that crazy?
That was amazing.
I know. I mean, you know, $12.99 sounds like a lot. Anything over $1,000, you're kind of boggled out of the head. But
and just to be clear, you were controlling it. It wasn't some professional.
No.
But someone. Somebody with your skill level was controlling that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Wow.
Yeah. It is one of these things that is a game changer, because now you can imagine what people can do with that kind of power. I mean, if you've got a camera that is that rock solid, so it doesn't look like it's jittery, that you don't have to do a lot of post-processing to, you could just fly it up, get your shot, come back down. It's a great tool to have in your tool bag.
Yeah, I'm just amazed by those shots. Those are incredible.
Yeah, I like it.
The camera is
integrated into the body. So the old style, the one that we have, it has a GoPro mounting point, which is great. It actually works well, but the problem is, it's a couple fold. One, it's not stabilized, so you see the shaking, even as it is solid. The other thing is, you can't aim it. So you point it down or you point it forward, that's the way the camera's going to point the entire
time.
Yeah,
you aim it left or right by turning the drone.
Exactly. And I also really love the fact that the app now has the ability to, because the camera swivel is built into the body, you can control it like this. There's a mounting point for your phone. So if you do this, it actually changes the swivel and the pan of the camera. So you can control the chopper with the sticks, and you use this to control where the camera's pointing.
Oh, wow.
It's
iOS and Android?
iOS, Android, anything that does Wi-Fi. When we took this footage, when it was coming back, because the return footage, the live footage, is a little bit choppy, so you don't see it all.
Okay.
But when it landed and we plugged it into a computer, I'm like, how solid is that? That looks like it's on a rail.
It looks like it's a promotional video for Las Vegas.
Yeah.
This is like a professionally done...
Yeah.
Oh,
and it actually even caught... I just noticed it caught the girls... a billboard going away.
It's Vegas.
Las Vegas.
Yeah.
All right. So, DJI, thank you very much. If you want to send us one or two or five, we wouldn't say no.
I'd like one, please.
All right. Now, let's move on. I asked people on Twitter what they wanted to see. I asked them if they wanted to learn about soldering. I asked them if they wanted to learn about a new drone.
And they wanted to see me.
And they wanted to see you. They were all about the podcast feed. Now, this comes straight from the chat room. People have asked us. I've got a show on the Twit TV network that's technically not on the Twit TV network, called Padres Corner, right?
Yeah.
And right now it's only available on YouTube and a super secret link that has been going around to download the high quality version. But people wanted to know, if I have a podcast, how do I get it out there? How do I get it on iTunes? How do I get it into the feeds? How do I get people multiple versions for all the devices that they want to use? Now, do you want to talk a little bit about what we do here at Twit?
Yeah. Well, back in episode 23 of Know How, Ayaz and Leo talked about audio podcasting. So this is kind of like podcasting 102. And so we're just going to talk specifically about the video. And what we do here at TWiT is the editor will take the footage of what you're watching now. They'll do all their changes to it and save out a version of that.
Right.
And then we have a system called Elroy. And what we've done with that system is they take that file and put in all the description, the title, any other the host information, any other notes, and it goes into Elroy, and then they process the audio in the three video feeds. We've got low quality, large, and HD.
Right. Now, you know, one of the things that...
Elroy right there.
We didn't want to show you Elroy because we didn't want to make you jealous, because we know that not everyone has a back-end system like that. It's actually... everyone raves about it. It's in-house. It's only here at TWiT, and it means the editor only has to worry about editing. And once he has the completed file the way he wants it, he hits publish, and all that information and the completed files go out to wherever they need to go.
Yeah, so we've got an automated system that will use FFmpeg to compress the files down to the appropriate resolutions and compression rates, and then it will FTP it to CacheFly. And it also posts the HD version to YouTube. And it's all automated. So once they send it off, it also posts it to the twit.tv site. So once it's put in there, it should be all set and automatically go out everywhere.
Now, that's what we do here.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what we got. We got this wonderful back-end system created by our wonderful engineer and engineering staff. But for those people who don't have an engineering staff and they don't have Elroy and they don't have a system that takes a single file and breaks it down to all the different versions you need and then publishes the feed, what do they have to do? We know that it has something to do with an RSS, but what does that mean?
There's an RSS feed which people can subscribe to. It's XML, and they use that in their podcatcher to get the latest episodes. Now, when you're doing this on your own, you need some way to generate that. But why don't we take a step back and we'll get to that because that's kind of at the end.
All right.
So we'll start. You've got your video file from Padres Corner.
Right.
And that clocked in at 3.3 gigabytes.
Yeah, so that's about an hour and 10 minutes or so.
Yeah, and nobody wants to download 3.3 gigabytes if they don't have to.
No.
So what I did was I ran it through Compressor on my Mac. That's a $49.99 program. And it has all these presets for different types of audio and video.
Oh, okay.
And I ran it through the standard video podcast compression that's in Compressor.
It's one of the options.
There's all sorts, but there's one. They've several just for podcasting. So I ran it through that and got it down to 623 megabytes.
Okay, so that's good. Down from 3 to 3 gigabytes to 600 plus
that's pretty
megabytes.
Good.
Right. So
and that's comparable with some of our TWiT shows that we put out.
Right.
So that's pretty good. It's really good quality. It's not HD, but it's good.
It's close enough.
Yeah, it's,
right,
yeah,
right. For what people are going to be doing, typically watching on a laptop screen or a tablet, it's going to look just fine.
Yeah, and if you're trying to do HD, it's going to be huge anyway.
Right.
But I figured this is good enough. So Compressor is one option. If you're on Windows, there's also the Adobe Media Encoder.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. That will come automatically if you use any version of the Creative Suite or any version of Premiere. It's how Adobe creates its file. So when you have to do the final render. Now, the cool thing about Adobe, what was it called again?
Media Encoder.
Media Encoder. One of the cool things about it is that you can set presets. So I can make like a macro saying, whenever I drop a file in X folder, make me three versions. Make me the high quality, make me the low quality, and make me the audio version. And it will just output to another folder all those finished files.
Yeah, and it's sort of the same with Compressor. When I do my AnimeCons TV episodes, I drag in the video, the high-quality video, and I tell it to save an MP3 version, a low-quality video, and an HD video. And then I just take those and put them in iTunes, put all the ID3D, all that other
information. All the tagging.
Yeah,
all
that tags.
All the tagging. Okay, so that's both Windows and Mac. We now know how to take that big file, the big show file, and turn it into different versions so I can have high-quality video, low-quality video, and audio. What do I do after that?
Now you need a place... Well, you can go... I mentioned you can go into iTunes, put all the ID3 tags in. That means just drag it in... And iTunes is an easy way to do it. If you hate iTunes, it's all right there. What you do is you get info, you type in the show name, description, album name, and just put the album art in. And that way everything is in the file, so whoever gets it, they'll see that album art, and they'll see the description and all that, which the feed doesn't always put into that file, so if somebody downloads it, they may not see your album art from that episode. So I recommend putting that in either through iTunes or through some other means. I usually just do iTunes because it's quick and easy.
Yeah.
So once you've got that, you've got your file ready to go, you need a place to put it. And so you need hosting.
Okay. Let's take a pause here because you said the magic word, hosting.
Yes.
This is going to become a religious debate for some people. Everyone has the hosting service they love. We're not saying your hosting service is not good. We're not saying you should switch off your hosting service. But right now, could you give us a couple of options?
Yeah. If you're looking for something, if this is podcast, is you're starting fresh, you have nothing out there to start with, so you've got some options that are specifically for podcasts. One is Libsyn. And this is, they charge for storage, but they have free bandwidth. Now, because it's video, you're going to need a lot of storage just for a few episodes. They add more storage every month, so you can build it out.
What do they charge?
For $5 a month, that's their lowest plan, you get 50 megabytes.
50 megabytes?
That's it.
Okay,
yes.
So that could store a couple of pictures.
To fit your episode at 623 megabytes, you would have to do the $75 plan, which would give you 1.5 gigabytes.
And that's one episode?
Yeah.
Or two, maybe.
Yeah, so you could probably fit two episodes in a month.
Okay. I'm sure they're great, but that doesn't sound like
something. A lot of these are developed for audio podcasters.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Another option is Blueberry at BLUBRRY. .com. They have the same where it's free bandwidth and you pay for storage. Their low-end plan is $12 a month for 100 megabytes. That's not going to work for you.
No.
So their high-end plan for only a gigabyte, you get less space, it's $80.
Yeah, I'm starting to realize what kind of deal we have with Twit. Because, there's some people in the chat room who are saying, oh, you know what, at those prices, I'm streaming it at 640 by 480.
Now, I see Beatmaster mentions archive.org. They actually mentioned that in the previous know-how episode.
That will work.
Yes, and it's free, but it's so slow.
You will watch Padres Corner at the end of the month. That's good. It is crazy slow.
I subscribe to some shows that have archive.org, and it always I'll download multiple episodes, and the ones that are on archive.org always take the longest to download. It's so frustrating.
Yeah.
So it's an option, but I don't like
it's
it.
It's not a great. Yeah, all. And you know, I think what we're seeing
for audio, it's fine because they're short.
Yeah, and this is the conundrum. You can get free but slow, or you can pay for speed and capacity. And there's nothing in between. You're just going to slide between those. You're going to have to choose which option works for you.
Yeah. And there's some other podcasting options. There's Shout Engine. That's audio only. SoundCloud has a beta for podcasts. That's audio only. And apparently you get locked in so you can't move the podcast.
That's not great.
So definitely use caution if you want to put your audio podcast there.
Now, Nappy Gnome is saying, wait a minute, what about Amazon S3? I believe we talked about this in the pre-show. You could do that, right?
Yeah.
It's not easy.
Yeah, and it's expensive.
It's kind of expensive.
Yeah, but the other option you have is to host your own. So you can just go, and if you already have a website, this probably works best. You should look for a host that has unlimited bandwidth and unlimited disk space, and unlimited, because this really limits.
Now know this, though. I mean, if your host may work great for your WordPress blog, it may work for throwing up a couple of small videos or pictures. If you're going to have something like Padres Corner, which is an hour plus, and each episode is going to be 600 megabytes to a gigabyte, yeah, they'll host it. And yes, people will be able to download it. It'll be faster than archive.org. But at some point, every good ISP is going to start to throttle you, and it's going to take longer for your listeners to get it, for your audience to get a hold of your content.
Now, Squarespace offers hosting for podcasts. They actually have different modules for that, and they are a sponsor of the Twit Network, so we'll put that out there. The limit there is no one file can be larger than 120 megabytes. Okay. So if you're doing audio, it's probably going to work great.
So if you were doing video, you could probably do like
a 10-minute
shows.
Yeah, so if you're doing little quick things, a little OMG craft or i5 sort of thing.
Either that or you cut up your program into multiple pieces.
Yeah.
But that might actually work because we do hour-long shows. That's our format. But there's a lot of content creators out there who just want to get on for 5 minutes and get off. If so, yeah, Squarespace is a great way to go because we already know their servers are going to stay up.
Yes.
They're very lightweight. And as you said, it's really easy. They've got a module built in.
Yeah, and they can handle the load.
Right.
For other options, I use DreamHost for my AnimeCons TV. You've mentioned 1&1.
One. Right.
There's also HostGator, Bluehost. So check them out and decide which one's best for you. But with any of them, you could install software to help you put out the podcast.
Yeah.
One option, you've got WordPress with plugins, and I'll talk about that in a minute. There's also a podcast generator, which is open source software designed just for putting out podcasts on a website.
Right.
So I can walk through some of these.
Let me say that right now. Actually, Navi Gnome in the chat room, he's still pushing Amazon S3. I actually like Amazon S3, but here's the thing that I think is going to turn off a lot of beginning developers. With Amazon S3, you're going to pay more to Amazon every time you get a new listener because you get charged for the bandwidth.
Yeah.
Don't do that to yourself unless you know you already have a monetization model, because you could get hit with a crazy huge bill that you're not ready for. What we've been suggesting is you go with these hosting providers who have a single price. You know you're never going to pay more than X amount of money per month that's going to handle all your bandwidth needs. Go S3 once you get the traffic and once you get the monetization. But otherwise, it's kind of risky.
Yeah, you don't want to, because it's bandwidth, you don't want to discover that, oh, a lot of people downloaded this, but I can't
monetize it
yet. So yeah, at least start with something where you know there's a fixed price.
Right.
So I've got on, I set up a website the other day, and it's my awesome show. This is a WordPress blog. I just picked a standard template that they had, and I installed the PowerPress plugin. It's created by the people from Blueberry. And whether or not you sign up for the Blueberry service, you can actually use this PowerPress plugin that they've created. And it provides good support for audio and video podcasts, and it can generate your feed for you. So I've put one episode in here, and this is just an audio episode as a sample. I've got the description, and then it lets me play it here. But I'll show you the admin screen
and show you
how we'd post a new episode, because that's what we care about. You can customize. It's all the standard WordPress install. But down here, PowerPress. So we'll go to PowerPress. And here we go. And you can see I haven't submitted to iTunes yet.
It's a step-by-step. I like that.
Yeah, and it's very clear. So the step one that I did the other day was I filled out the settings, and that's just the standard stuff that you can see down below where I've got the title of the show.
What is it going to be called? What kind of tags do you want attached? Is it going to go into a specific part of iTunes? Those are the standard settings that you'd see on any podcast.
After you've submitted to iTunes, you can put the feed URL in here so you can provide a specific iTunes link.
Right.
Descriptions for the show, categories, and image artwork.
This is pretty comprehensive. This is everything you might want to fill out about your show.
And it even has advanced options that we don't need to get into here. But this is the show information. And to create an episode, all you do is make a new post like you would in WordPress.
Oh, okay.
So we'll add new. And we'll go Amazing Episode 2.
Are you sure you're not? Are you over-promising here? You always want to under-promise.
This is episode 2, and it will not under-deliver.
Thank you.
So we've got description. You can put whatever. And then down here, media URL. So after you've uploaded your media file, you will just paste the URL in here. And it can auto-detect the size and the length, or you can fill it in.
Right, right. I'd say go ahead and let the automatic settings just take over, unless they're messing up.
Unless it doesn't work.
Right.
But the auto-detect works for MP3s only. So for the video, you would have to put in the length, so you'd put in like 10 minutes. Let's see. We can paste in. I'll grab a file.
I like your screen. It's a panda.
It's not my screen.
Oh, that's right. That's my screen. Never mind. Okay, so as you're doing this, what's going to be happening is once you drop that in to the post, the back end, the podcasting program is going to automatically generate an RSS entry for that particular podcast, right?
Yes. Yes. So I have the file here, and it's all set up. So I just hit publish over here.
And now it's going to have to upload the file, and boom.
Boom.
There we go.
And so if I go back to the main page here, we should see episode 2. Boom. And it's, look, it's even got a player.
Which, yeah, well, okay.
Yeah. No, but it'll play.
Wait a minute. So now we know how this works. We understand how this is generating the feed. What does the RSS feed actually do? How does it work?
All right. Well, we'll take a look at the RSS feed. I had it brought up, but then somebody closed my window. I'll just take a second. Sorry.
This moment brought to you by Ayn, leader of all doges. Okay.
All right. So here we have the RSS feed for Know How. It's the video high version.
Okay.
And so this is what it would generate, something like this.
So every one of our shows has an RSS feed.
Yes. And so this is a good example to look at. And it starts out, it's got the show information, it's got copyright and contact information, artwork. It points to itself so people know where the feed is, and show description, keywords. And then it has all these items. You'll see item, item, item. And these are all the episodes. And so that just repeats the same information over with the titles and the dates and descriptions.
Right. And so when you create a new show in iTunes, it's actually going to ask you for where you have this file, because
yes,
it's going to generate all of the entries on iTunes out of this. And this RSS feed it's the same feed that we use if you go to our show notes page, where you could subscribe to your device, right?
Yes.
So you drop it on your laptop, your desktop, your mobile device. That's all the same style of RSS feed. It's universal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Now, I've got my RSS feed, and remember, the show notes are going to be in the show page, so you can find out exactly how I did that. But once I've got that RSS feed, how do I get people to actually know about the program? How do I get it out there?
Well, first, you have to make sure you have the link on your site.
Okay,
because
that's good.
When people come to your site, you want to be able to say, here's how you subscribe. I usually provide a link to the RSS, a link to iTunes, because that's where a lot of people subscribe. That's where the most people subscribe to podcasts. And then you can provide links to other places too. The Miro, Blueberry, or Stitcher.
Right.
After you've submitted to those places, but to submit to those places, that's the I kind of skipped ahead.
Right.
You have to submit to iTunes, and to do that, you have to install iTunes. You go in and you just install. There's a link to submit
a
podcast.
Exactly. Yeah. If you have iTunes open, you're going to see a little link that says, go ahead and submit your podcast. Once you've submitted your podcast, assuming that you already have the files where they're supposed to be, you have the RSS file correct, there's a link on your site to the RSS feed that you can give to iTunes. It will check the RSS feed, make sure it's valid, and then create the show.
Yes, and then it'll take a few days before it's listed in iTunes.
Yeah. Now, one last bit. Okay, there's people in the chat room who are asking about YouTube, and other people are pointing out rightly that YouTube's not a podcasting platform. It's a streaming platform that people can use for podcasting. We have it easy here because we do it once and it publishes out to many things, but there is no way to integrate an RSS feed into YouTube. It's not just going to automatically upload because you've created the RSS feed.
Yeah, you still have to upload to YouTube separately if you want your video there.
Yeah.
And why not have the video there? Because it is
discoverability.
Yeah. And so you can also put it on Vimeo if you want, but you have to upload it there. That's separate. So get it out everywhere you can.
Yeah.
And
Patrick, thank you very much. Thank you for this, and thank you for everything you do for Twit. I mean, you make it so that we don't have to go through all this.
Well, I do want to mention, on the Twit Wiki, we do have a page called Show Feed Anatomy. Mm-hmm. And if you look for that on wiki.twit.tv, I actually step through the podcast feed line by line, explaining what every line of that RSS feed is for and what it does.
There you go.
So if you want to know how the feed works,
ready-made,
it's
education
on the wiki.
Yeah.
Now, remember, if any of this has you puzzled, you can always go to our show notes. We have some of the best show notes in the know-how biz, in the do-it-yourself market, in the makerspace. We're going to show you exactly how these projects work. We're going to point you in the right directions. We're going to give you the links and the bits of hint tip stuff that's going to help you when you actually try to create this on your own. Just go to our show page at twit.tv/KH. That's a know-how, and you'll find each and every single one of our episodes, which, by the way, also has a little drop-down menu so you can get the RSS feed to get our episodes automatically on your iPhone or your iPad, your Android tablet, your Windows phone, your Zombie Zune, your laptop, your desktop. Wherever you want it, that's how we're going to give it to you. Also, you could email us at knowhow@twit.tv. We will ignore the email, but you could email us there if you wanted to. Rather, you should probably drop into our Know How G Plus community at gplus.to/twitkh. There you'll find a vibrant community, over 6,000 members and growing all the time, who will answer your questions or we'll give you hints about projects that you might want to do. In fact, there are many projects, many segments on KnowHow that we take straight out of our G Plus community. It's part of the way that we interact with you. Also, you can find us on Twitter, specifically me at twitter.com/PadreSJ. If you subscribe to that, you're going to be able to find out what we're doing each week, and you'll be able to suggest directly to me what you want to see in future episodes. Patrick, you're on Twitter too, right?
Yeah, at P. Delahanty.
P. Delahanty. Yeah. Find him and actually unsubscribe from Cranky Hippo because Brian's not here and he doesn't deserve your love.
He's not going to watch this episode anyway.
He's not watching After Ein. Also, did you know we have a third permanent member of our community? It's not just Brian and myself, actually.
Oh, is it the raccoon?
It's not the raccoon. It's actually our stellar TD, Alex. Where's Alex? Flowmaster Gumple. Yeah, he's not going to. He's shy. He's just waving at us. But he drives our tech. He makes the show run on time. And he's just a hell of a guy. Finally, we want to thank everyone here at the Brick House who made this all possible for all the technology that we have to play with. And now that you know, go do it.